that we can proceed in one of two ways. One is to just open the floor to anyone's comments. But I'm also thinking that before we do, perhaps it would be wise if any one of the three of you have something to say about what another one had said.
Yeah, I have something to say about what both of them said, but I will do it a little indirectly. You know, it's easy to focus on Erdogan. He's the president. He makes the major decisions, and he certainly is responsible for a lot of the things that happened since the election, but probably many things before, the relationship to the Gezi Park peaceful and nonviolent movement, and so on. So he has a lot on his conscience. But I think it's important to focus on the other actor, who is the major actor in this, and this is the Kurdish HDP. You can see in terms of even the family relations, and I'm not really a great expert on Turkish-Kurdish history, but you can see that even some of the members of the current leadership of HDP are PKK militants. And so in some historical sense, there's a link, obviously, on that level. Nevertheless, and I think the settlement process played a big role in this, there has been a transformation of Kurdish politics. HDP, already you could see in the presidential that Demirtas ran a really good campaign, got many more votes than expected. His role since June 2015 has been outstanding, I would say, from point of view of trying both to respond to the situation in a constructive way, and more narrowly to keep the votes over 10%. He sees, of course, that it would be a disaster if in the election HDP doesn't get 10. If it does better than before, it would be a great victory. All assume that they're not going to dare to cheat. So in this context, I think we really have to look at the PKK, and I want to do this because the instincts of New School students tend to be quite revolutionary. They think of me as a bold conservative, and I think I do have to satisfy their urges to have that, to be able to make that depiction. The PKK is playing a destructive role in the current process. It's pretty obvious. Because if you want to get votes for Demirtas and HDP, you respond to some things, at least in the sense of defense. You don't initiate new actions, which they do. If one reads even Zaman, which on this issue probably is more reliable than other things, they initiate actions, and they are doing things which are harmful, certainly for HDP's chances, certainly harmful for the peace process, certainly reinforces the logic which Banu spoke about, namely that the picture of the enemy can be continue to be portrayed in these highly dehumanizing terms. So I think there's also a struggle within Kurdish politics. And it's a very difficult struggle, because although the PKK never wins anything through its violence, the fact is that it is linked to groups in Syria who are winning things and who are doing a good job as against an enemy, which is quite different than Erdogan. We should not confuse ISIS and Erdogan. Erdogan is an authoritarian leader in a democracy. The ISIS is a totalitarian organization which ought to be defeated. And they're doing a pretty good job in fighting it, but this requires the continuation of the military organization. And I think this creates a problem for HDP to the extent that PKK's own military posture and I think ultimately pseudo-revolutionary rhetoric are reinforced by the overall situation in the region. I think a lot depends on HDP being able to continue to follow the line that it has followed, both before this vote and afterwards. And of course, a lot depends also on a lot of Turks, ethnic Turks, supporting them, not just their, not just voting for them, and there's a certain amount of people who vote for them now, but also by protecting their rights and by opposing the kind of discourse which Banu worked out. So a lot depends on Kurdish politics and basically the defeat of the PKK within Kurdish politics, which only the HDP can accomplish.
So I noticed that Banu was writing notes. Do you have a response to that?
Not immediately. Yeah. I'd actually be really interested to open it up for discussion.
Okay, I just would like to add very briefly a non-expert concern. Presentations each, with the exception of Andrew's last comment, is focused on Erdogan and the AKP and what they're likely to do in the case of this scenario or that. And I'm really quite curious, if we assume that he and they will be up to no good, what the response is. What happens on November 2nd? I think Andrew's comment actually highlights those kinds of dilemmas, and it's a pressing concern on my part. I mean, because I assume, as Andrew does, that some sort of social development has to support any positive democratic development. So how do we move? How what is likely to happen after some version of another disappointing result? Let's assume it is perpetual recalling of elections with permanent transitional government
or states of emergency,
actually permanent states of emergency. So how does the society who's critical of this respond to that? It seems to me that what I know about Turkish politics and opposition politics, that the possibilities of people acting together in a constructive fashion are challenging. The likelihood of that being positive is very, very challenging. Everyone then? Anyone? Yes, please. Your hand? Yes, please. Are you on your hand?
No,
raising your hand.
Excuse me.
It's your finger.
The finger is up like this.
I've got just a simple question for the participants concerning the student issue. Why didn't Erdogan? The question for all the participants concerning the cheating issue. The question is,
why didn't he cheat on June 7th?
Yeah, why didn't he cheat?
Because
so
he
far?
Couldn't, probably.
What are present holes and what are the opportunities for the opposition movement to control for cheating at this moment?
I think in June 7th, that's another, I think, important part of the election, going beyond the election day, that there is the, especially for instance, the World and Beyond and many volunteers, they organized successfully. So this suddenly, I think even if they tried, they couldn't have done that because of the mass, participation during the electoral process and watching the votes through volunteers. The problem here today is even the volunteers, World and Beyond, has been doing as much as they can today even, but especially in the region, there is a problem of security. Would that be possible to there are the special forces, the heavy arms, and in that condition, what would be the results? And there is, of course, even without cheating, I think, I'm not sure, I'm not studying elections in that way, but even with eight, I think the ATP got 18 million votes. So without getting even one additional vote, if you can prevent other parties' electors not to vote or not come to the election by suppressing them, by preventing them to vote, AKP can increase its vote to 42.5% or so, which could be enough for at least have a simple majority, even in a four-party parliament. So that would be the, of course, not the best option, but at least we will be in the parliament. Especially the worry is about the increased polarization, increased hatred, violence, especially regionally increased security measures. Would that be possible to have a free, fair election? Is this suspicious? And I hope that,
Here's a structural point. Before HDP decided to contest as a party and not run individual candidates, they had a certain number of deputation in parliament, and they participated even in the failed constitution-making process previous on the basis of a relatively few deputies, but they were important enough in that context. They made a gamble, and they opted to run as a party and not run independents. So had they been under 10%, and can they be kept under 10% in this election, those votes are redistributed among the other parties, which I think traditionally means something like 4 or 5% of those, 4 or 5% of the overall vote is transferred to AKP, and the other half is transferred to the other party. Not even, I think even a larger number goes to AKP, because the conversions favor the first in almost every election, the way that the conversion system works. So they basically don't even have to improve their number if they keep the HDP under 10%, they would actually be able to have at least the majority to form government, and possibly, I haven't figured this out numerically, I'm sure one can do this, maybe even get close to the 3/5 that they need with the referendum. The problem they have now is that I cannot see any Kurd voting for them, given what they've done. That is, they've been getting, AKP has been getting a significant number of Kurdish votes. I don't know if anybody knows the exact number now in the south. And of course, it's not easy to tell the ethnicity of the voters. But I think a significant number of Kurdish voters, still conservative Kurds, voted for AKP. Now it's going to be really after allowing explosions, if not organizing them, to take place against the Kurdish demonstration and the Kurdish meeting previously. And relaunching the war, and so on and so on. They're not gonna. So actually, to push HDP legally under the, even with the things you're speaking about, I don't see that they can actually accomplish that. Plus, they have not improved their position with respect to the other parties in any of the polls. So I think that, in a way, unless they cheat, the election will turn out to be the same. The election will turn out to be the same as before. And so I think, given what you said about Erdogan being so threatened on the level of even the criminal law, I think the temptation to cheat would be great. Now, I've been reading about this in Zaman to try to figure out, can they cheat? Forget one sign, for example, that it will be difficult is that they try to move the electoral booths, electoral posts in the south, in such a way that a lot of people would have to travel. We've seen this in American South now, right? Trying to figure out how people can be actually stopped from voting. The Electoral Commission denied their right to do this. So this is not a totalitarian state, or even a very well-coordinated authoritarian one. And so when it comes to the counting, the question is, in whose hands is it? There's a stage which all the other parties can supervise, because apparently there's a program which collects the votes, and then a program which determines the seats. And that second program, the other parties, HDP, CHP, can duplicate. So you have to do it on the first level. You have to actually cheat on the number of votes which are actually given at the various polling places. Now, I just don't know to what extent the opposition and other groups can supervise supervise
that. Question, actually.
As in some countries, there are exit polls, which is a form of supervision. I don't think you have exit polls, right? Or they don't allow exit polls. So it's a question of electoral representatives of the different parties at the polling places, and to what extent they can be effective. Do they have their own count? Is it the same everywhere? Let us say in provinces which are heavily occupied, it may be even dangerous for them to go in and say your vote is not 98% but only 55. You know, you can cheat in different places to increase their vote. But I think the real problem is the Kurdish provinces, and there I'm just not sure if even on the level of the polling places, cheating can be easily organized. So it's really, probably the answer is that no one quite knows whether they can do it or not. I mean, you think of Russia, right, where it's done, but probably the technical aspects are different.
Can I just add a few things on that
sure.
note? I mean, I know that these horrible scenarios are being circulated about the likelihood of, you know, that AKP will cheat the elections and shift the results. I think I agree with what Artu said about the critical point being not so much the actual stealing of the vote, but in disabling certain groups of people from actually being able to go and cast their vote. But I think I'm also, maybe I'm naive, but I'm also hesitant to assume complete bad faith on part of every political party in the system. I mean, AKP is a party with a huge following. I mean, millions of people vote for it. So I think we have to assume some good faith. I mean, there should be bad faith insofar as it's everywhere. In every country, it's possible to steal votes. So I'm not sure I want to really orient this discussion on speculating about whether or not the votes will be stolen, but rather, if we are afraid of such a possibility, first, obviously, we need to be vigilant at the polls, right? And a lot of people have really taken this up since the last election. But secondly, we really need to shift the discussion to question why we still have the 10% electoral threshold, right? I mean, if the 10% electoral threshold had already been eliminated, we wouldn't be worrying so much about the rigging of the elections. And insofar as AKP has not done that when it had the power to do that, I think that should be the focus of our criticism. It should be also the basic demand for all political parties to lower the electoral threshold. Because really, as Andrew already stated, the electoral threshold has been the guarantee of AKP's overrepresentation in parliament in comparison to the votes that it has garnered over the various elections. With HDP's entry as a party, that overrepresentation has ended. And so, I mean, if the trick is to keep HDP below the threshold, I think what we should question is the structural presence of that threshold. Okay, that doesn't maybe help us in the very short run of the elections, but I think, I mean, this is not something to be postponed, and I would really rather focus our democratic energies on eliminating that than ultimately simply speculating about nightmare scenarios.
I want to ask you about actually to turn it to HDP election, actually, all of you. I mean, I guess it's going to be also speculation a little bit, but just considering the whole process from June to until now, and it has been really impressive that the people were, that the supporters and followers of HDP has been very organized and working really hard. But there are also certain facts that, and I think, yeah, I mean, when you say, Andrew, that PKK is sort of sabotaging, sort of like, or a threat to, or harmful towards the whole situation, there's also the fact that there are over 700 people who were murdered since, you know, June until this point. And within Turkey, basically. And just yesterday, I think Turkish Air Forces just bombed Tal Abyad YPG bases. So there's this sort of like trying to pull them in into conflict. There's this constant attack. And there's also these talks about that there's a generational difference between the Kurdish supporters, that the older generation is more willing to work on the peace process, whereas the younger generation is more militant and more willing to maybe, or say less willing to wait for a longer period of time. Plus there's the aspect of there has been no communication with Öcalan for over 6 months now. So considering all of that, even if we assume that there's no rigged elections and HDP goes over 10%, what if this doesn't lead to anything? And what if, you know, the peace process does not, you know,
the other thing is going to lead to nothing.
Yeah.
That we know for sure.
And then what's going to happen?
And
that's
as far as this thing, so far, surprising result, right? The other thing is, when did the PKK insurrection start? 80s, right?
84.
84, right? So now give it 31 years, and what has happened? What Banu described still happens. They are still bombed, and they can take retribution. So, yes, if the younger and the older people disagree among the Kurds, one of them could be right and the other could be wrong. I would say the older ones, if you are right about the generational difference, are the ones who are right, and the younger ones are wrong. This doesn't mean that military and violent strategies, even under no circumstances, can do some good. I try to say that with respect to ISIS, both in Iraq and in Syria, those strategies were right, and they led to success. In Turkey, I mean, there's no chance. It just leads to further polarization in a country where the immense majority are Turkish, with a military force that is one of the largest in Europe. It is also supported by the powers. There's no criticism from the United States ever of the Turkish military. Sometimes there's some sounds about Erdogan, but the military's role is sacrosanct. So, you know, one strategy is a certain loser, and the other one is a difficult one and has a relatively, modest chances to succeed. So which do you pick? If we use politics for expressive reasons, then I think we pick the first one, the revolutionary one. It's a great form of self-expression to parade with guns and to be able to shoot people. But if you're interested in actually some results, which in this context is by no means excluded, as you can see in both Syria and Turkey, then I think I would... But PKK is interested in its own organizational superiority. I don't think necessarily they're romantics. I think they gain organizational power from doing what they're doing. It's just that Kurdish opinion outside should not be supporting them, should
but
not give them legitimacy.
The question is, how long can HDP continue attracting the younger generation? Because it seems like, for many people, the peace process has been more of Kurds compromising, and gaining nothing in return. So how long can this continue like that?
I don't know. It could be a long time. How long can it continue? Turkey has been involved in a process of change since really 1987. And that's most of you were not born then. It's been going on. How long can it continue? Well, it can continue. But the point is that the geopolitical situation is changing in favor of the Kurds. This is the result of development of Iraq and of Syria too. Both places, Kurdish power has been strengthened. They're two different Kurdish powers. I don't really understand why with the Kurdistan regional government, there should be such bad relations between YPG even, and but nevertheless, there's Kurdish power now, and I think that changes things geopolitically also. So their support, which was high in 1918 and 1919, and then it disappeared, is again at a relatively high international level. The regional government in Iraq is quite successful in the Iraqi context in actually having created a quasi-state type formation. So this is not a bad time to be a Kurdish politician, and it's a much better time than 1980s, where when PKK launched this thing. So I would say this is, Demirtas seems to think this way, right? I mean, I would support him and the HDP rather than those who think that you can still gain everything with the gun.
Okay, I'm not.
Just want to add that at some point, those who want the actors who want peace should win over those who want the continuity of violence in different reasons. So without like willingness of the actors, we cannot just come up as as an Azugamot procedure structure. We can have peace. So at some point, I agree that I think the HDP, that's why important, because Demirtas, even he claims that if they will be outside the parliament, they will continue to solve this problem over the peace. So it would be a problem, of course, and I agree that the need in the PKK or the Kurdish movement in Turkey is that homogeneous, and there are parts that, and a lot of people agreed that the HDP and Demirtas find himself in kind of in the middle of fires, not only from one side but the other. That's why the HDP and the political solution is so precious, not only to go against the established Turkish state's choice militarization of the situation whenever they want, but also against the PKK.
And just to add, there would be very reasonable solutions for reorganizing the Turkish state in which Kurds get their rights and the nationalists would not lose their Turkey. So it's not as if this cannot be done.
Okay, I'm going to recognize two people, young woman here and over here. Before I do, I actually want to, I have a comment, but I'm not going to make a comment. I'm just going to give a citation. In answer to this question, they were at a similar time in Poland. A man by the name of Adam Michnik wrote a classic essay, which was a key to the development of the democratic opposition. The essay is entitled "The New Evolutionist." That's all I'm going to say. Please.
Just to sort of build off her point and just to continue the discussion, I mean, I have about 3 points, but they could also very easily just the questions. I mean, I think we're just, in terms of whether or not the PKK is sabotaging HDP, I think a bigger question would be how the Kurdish people or the Kurdish social movement is feeling represented in this whole scenario. And right now, for example, I mean, there's, there have been sieges on Kurdish neighborhoods that is very similar, like you said, returning to the 1990s, though I completely agree with your argument that there was no return, there was no period where it changed. It's just been a continuity of violence, just in, in different forms. But, I mean, it's just, and this brings it, like, as far as the PKK is concerned, it's not itself even a homogeneous party. There are all these different factions of it, especially when you were talking about the youth, and I am assuming maybe you're referring to YDGH. Where YDGH is like sort of the militant youth group of the Kurdish social movement, and they've actually been, they've been sort of protecting certain neighborhoods against the Turkish army, but you cannot deny the fact that, like, just locals, and we're talking, and I don't like to put women and children in the same category like this, but, just locals on all levels, women, children, whatever, have been sort of rising up against the state and the state forces, and they see, and joining with this, with these factions, against the Turkish state, because I think they just feel like there is, you know, I mean, they're not going to recognize, like, these autonomous, and they've been declaring autonomous neighborhoods, and there's been very little coverage of this, and they, you know, I mean, I think it just really speaks to the fact that they don't feel like their movement is represented at all, or it's not, you know, and HDP is the sort of, like, a very substantive player in this that is also representing them, and, like, I mean, I don't think there's even, wouldn't even necessarily say that the HDP is against PKK in this respect, like, I think there's, you know, a lot more going on in that sense. And then my one question is, like, so the HDP passing the threshold is a huge possibility that we are all very much hoping for. Are we going to be in the exact same situation where Turkey's in a hung parliament, and then you have choices between coalitions like MHP and AKP or AKP and CHP? And do you see what I'm saying? So would it even, you know, help the situation? Anyway, that's my point.
Go ahead.
One point or question was, is a follow-up point to Palmer's last remarks, which is about, it was about like this far-reaching practices of violence, not just perpetrated by the state, but like all those practices of lynching, burning, attacking, not only to against the Kurds, but at this point right now, unfortunately, to everyone. Maybe not to everyone, but like whoever seems to be a member of the opposition in many provinces, in many, especially in, like, in the peripheral provinces, that's unfortunately the case. So I think this is one of the most difficult times, at least as far as I can think of, where the entire discourse of opposition, which we are all contributing to reproduce and to keep alive, is like possibilities of armed conflict, which can be legitimate for us between like the Kurds and the state, like the Kurdish guerrillas and the state, or to the possibility that like the Kurdish representative would overcome the threshold, whatever. I think one of the missing things that we tend to, unfortunately, we are forced to forget, like, is the non-presence of any other significant opposition or actor, namely, like, for example, after the Ankara bombing, like, the massacre, there was 2 days general strike, and nothing happened. Think of a country where these unions and working class parties and organizations could not even organize in the fields, in the factories, in the sites, couldn't organize a strike. They just declared, I think it was just a formal gesture, which was good, but like nothing happened. Some of us was like hoping, really hoping that maybe that's not the like arguing or developing kind of a permanent state of mourning against all these killings, but like developing kind of opposition which is not 100% tied to the like dilemmas, ups and downs, or the internal conflicts or the Kurdish resistance, but to the general society. So what is like in the last 4 years personally, what is unsettling me so deeply is this like far-reaching and kind of the ubiquity of violence almost all over the country, and that's been intensifying. And I think that's one of the strengths of the intensifying crisis. Like, what would happen? Think of a situation that I think the AKP is not the only problem of Turkey right now. It's not only thanks to AKP, we as opposition have an ultimate enemy, like the ultimate beast to kill. But what if those like 20 million people who are voting and clapping against those who are murdered, like 2 days after the Ankara bombing, like some people were happy, and some people will still keep like supporting. That's not only voting; it's something that I think we need to think beyond the terms of the, like voting and elections. Given the fact that there will be more elections, more like hijacked elections. This is very possible. But like thinking more in like social terms, like social and deep like psychological and psychic and like the symbolic effects of this like permanence of violence. First perpetrated by state, always perpetrated by state, police and the state forces, and even the law enforcement, even the law itself is just hijacked by this vindictive state. But like, but then what about the others, like our neighbors, our people that we are living, we are sharing the same living spaces, and this is not a solution. Like what, like those practices of violence, that's I think can be my general comment. Those practices of violence, once implemented, once like disseminated, has very disruptive effect on the like on our senses of community, our struggling against, like our senses of struggle, let alone the revolution or any kind of change. But like being together, living together, like basic principles of the democratic society. I think that's something we need to think about like after.
Can I just ask a question? When you said nothing happened, you mean that the strikes were called, but there wasn't a strike?
The strike couldn't be organized.
Well,
like
okay.
The workers,
right. So the calls were strikes, but there were no strikes.
Only
yeah.
In some of
the
factories and sites.
In some cities, for instance, it was a really big meeting organized by.
I'm not talking about meeting. I'm like the factories kept working. Only
the level of organization is very small.
But that was not a like just we stopped the lights.
Brecht in 1953 suggested to the Central Committee they choose another people. You know, you can't choose another people. You have the 90 million plus is who you have, and within them you have the kind of people who enjoy watching somebody else from another ethnic group, religious group suffer. This is not the majority, it's a small number, but in any case, there are such people. And I don't see, you know, one. We used to think, and maybe some of you still think this, that if you had the right kind of revolution, that would actually create the new human being who would no longer be like that. You don't think that? Well, I think the only thing you can actually change is institutions. And then institutions may or may not, hopefully they do change the way people interact. But the only thing that is within your power to change is not how, let's say, 10 million people in Turkey think and act. This is not within your power, not within the PKK's power, not within Karl Marx's power. It's just not in anybody's power to do that. So it's not the thing to focus on. You focus on what you can do. If you engage in politics, you focus on what you actually can accomplish. And what you're talking about is lamentable, but it is not something
no,
that
no,
you can
that
directly
would,
change.
I think what, like focusing on the institution would be a
what?
Very top-down idea.
What?
Focusing on the
institutions
is
a top-down idea.
Yes.
What?
Focusing on institutions is a top-down
like
idea.
Everything.
Are you kidding me?
But I think that
are you kidding me? Every revolutionary has always, among other things, focused on institutions.
Yeah, of course. But what
and
I was talking about
you also
was a little bit
on
different.
And organizations also focus on political change, but
right.
They are focusing on changing people's mentalities.
No, I'm talking about
okay.
A specific.
That is the most useless thing I know is to focus on people's mentalities. I can't pick the Hungarian people. I think that they are electing a horrible government. We can't change them. That's the Hungarian people.
I don't think. What Mina meant was, let's go find another people. But I do think that there is an element of the government's promotion and even incentivization of civilian acts of violence toward others.
So that we can stop.
That we can stop, right? But so this has to be problematized. In this conversation, for example, we've talked about how whether there's a distance between the PKK and the HDP, this is an important question to be discussed. But also, I think another ingredient is what is the distance of AKP from the violent crowd, some of whom are actually part of the party
yes.
organization,
yes. Yes.
who are lynching, who are going and attacking newspapers,
yes.
right, who are promoting the lynching of neighbors.
It should be in jail.
Well, they're not being punished.
Well, not under Erdogan.
Well, yes, so I mean, so this
but
is
if they
a
do
very,
this under this a government a, in which the HDP is an important member, they'll be in jail. You can jail some people, not as many as you actually would probably like. But
no. Okay, but I would like to continue.
By implication, but you can jail some people. Yes, you can jail them.
Can I continue? Okay, go ahead.
Okay. I just want to finish this point.
Do.
So, I think it's really important that we begin to problematize the distance that AKP takes actively with this kind of civilian violence. But also, I think people are really looking to see a certain distance in terms of a serious condemnation of the policies of Islamic State. And AKP has been so hesitant in condemning the violence of the AKP,
of the Islamic State of ISIS,
especially in Syria, that I think, I mean, it has really put itself in a situation that undermines its own legitimacy when it begins the armed struggle against both ISIS but also other actors in the region. So I think this is really another part of the puzzle that we haven't really gotten to talk about. And then just a very brief comment on the question that you asked about the hung parliament or a possibility of a coalition. I don't think a coalition would be such a bad idea for Turkey right now, especially a coalition between AKP and the Republican People's Party. I mean, I think that seems to be a very plausible outcome of the following elections as well. And I see no reason why this shouldn't go forward.
I mean, that would require marginalizing Erdogan. I mean, his preference, I would say, you know, it's very easy to set out the preferences. His preference is big AKP victory. His second best, if he can't cheat, can't do anything, then I think he wants MHP. From his point of view, actually, he has done some things now which MHP should like, right? Because the reopening the military struggle is something. And there's something Bocelli has with him, so it's a personal problem, which I think could be overcome. So I would say the big danger, I mean, in the line that you said, yes, there could be an MHP-AKP coalition, which would be around an even more aggressive nationalism than you have in the AKP, and at the same time it had to make concessions to Erdogan's presidential, or at least some aspect of his power-increasing dreams. I think that's the worst option. If I were in CHP, and some of my friends probably are in Turkey, I would say that one important way of entering into a coalition would be to take HDP with them. They have not expressed any objection, CHP, of actually having HDP in a coalition. MHP did, but CHP did not. The reason for that is, I would not say because they should be charitable to Kurds, which they may not be, although they have Kurdish. Kılıçdaroğlu, for example, is a Alevi Kurd, right, ethnically. But they could do it because of self-interest, because they would come in as a very much weaker partner with that kind of president and so on. So in order for them to represent a bigger weight in the coalition, it would be much their advantage to actually want a three-party coalition. I take that to be the really positive. I would give it 5% maybe as a chance, but that would be the way. Then after that, I would say an AKP-CHP government would pacify the society to some extent. It would certainly stop at least the instrumentalization of the courts, the destruction of the police, the attacks on the press. So I think it would be better. Now, from a Kurdish point of view, it would be, that's what you're saying, has limited use.
Okay, I see two people on the floor who want to speak, and I just want to say that I'm haunted by the fact that the ineffectiveness of the call for the general strike, and it's related to my suggested reading.
Okay. I'm really pleased by your introduction of CHP, JHP, to the discussion, because I think one of the dramatic developments of last 2-3 months is, in Turkish context, all the debate as preferred by AKP is structured around state/AKP versus HDP/Kurds. And this, of course, makes us forget about many things that we experienced in Turkey for the last 2 years since Gezi, which was a rapprochement between different social movements, for instance, like more secular Western lifestyle concerned populations with the Kurds, with LGBTs, with environmental activists. So this rapprochement was actually a very defining thing of post-Gezi Turkey. And actually, the last elections, in June elections, we again, just like Ertuğ says, on the 8th of June, people were happy because some votes were moved between two different groups, from CHP to HDP particularly. So I think framing the debate only between AKP and Kurds is a tactic of AKP, because this relates, creates, relates very much to the nationalist failure and everything. So I really find it very useful to think about, especially the next day after elections, from the line of thought you just suggested, what are the possible rapprochements, particularly between HDP, hopefully in parliament, and CHP, and possibly, just like you said, there, to some maybe factions in the AKP, because otherwise we really cannot find, let's say, democratic and parliamentary system way out, other than all the fraud possibilities or the more armed ways of choice.
Okay, I'm seeing a lot of people shake their heads in agreement with that, but I'm tempted to stop it on that and then say we should continue on public seminar, but I will recognize two people before we actually conclude. You wanted desperately to say something a moment ago, not anymore?
I don't even think I raised my hand.
Oh, then maybe
I'm
sorry. You were just getting very enthusiastic,
yeah.
Which is good.
Just to about Nes' comment, that is a kind of frustration for many of us that during at least one way or another a peace process, ceasefire, and so on, so for a couple of years. Having people as if they are so willing and waiting at their homes to lynch people. So this just bursting out and then in the streets and burning it down. But on the other hand, I think that what can be done, in terms of, which refers to Andrew's point, I think is that at least we can work on, political actors, political parties and leaders and their members to create or to support the political language in Turkey to marginalize not the members of HDP or those who are marching in the peace rally, but marginalizing those who want to lynch people or burn their offices. So that is, I cannot change that person, but I can make him or her to feel as delegitimized and criminal. And that's only I can do through by working on the political actors in one way or another, and I agree, as well that it is not just 10% and more HDP in the party. I think is very important. Will solve everything just like at 2nd of November? Of course not.
Okay, so I want to thank everyone for taking part. I want to say that we're going to continue. And we're going to continue first by actually posting a video recording of our discussion. Ertuğ has agreed to actually follow up with a contribution to public seminar. I'm going to invite the other panelists, if they want, to, if they're willing and able, to do the same. And I invite everyone who's attended to consider the possibility of doing that, as well as everyone who is seeing us on this broadcast. So the discussion will continue. The discussion will continue about Turkey. We have a public seminar post coming up in the next couple of days on the Canadian elections, on the Polish elections, and these actually similar problems, not in Canada, but in Poland, are actually manifest as well. Thanks again, and until the next time and on the web. Thank you.
Yeah, the Polish thing didn't go too well.
The Polish thing went predictably, but very badly. It's the Polish road to Hungary. No, it's probably not. There's too many other.
The structure is better now. And I don't think that the legal control situation is just pretty
It's worrisome. It's worrisome.
It's a threat.
And it, you know,
it's over the immigration.
It's the immigration. It's the Catholic Church.
Immigration is very
and you also don't present the fact
that the roots of Poland is a remarkable success story. And I